Question 11. You never took up a full-time job in your life, and you believe in your concept of living the laptop lifestyle. How feasible is your two-hour work theory? Is that easy to make money? What tips would you give our readers who want to follow your way? I don't think there's ever an easy way to make money. That is a sentence that should be completely eliminated from anyone's vernacular, unless you're gullible, because there's no such thing as easy money. Even if you set up a two-hour workday, which I've done with two or three different business models, there is a lot of work to set it up. You might be able to function it and maintain it after you've set it up on 2 hours, but there is a process during the early days where you're not going to work 2 hours, you're going to work 4 hours, 8 hours, some days 10, 12 hours, but you're really enjoying it. So to get to a two-hour workday, you will have to set up the blog and get it making money and create the products and get the traffic coming in and make sure your conversion is working and have all these things set up. Then you can just sort of write a blog post once a week, help your coaching clients, and you're going to spend maybe 2 hours a day doing it. Or you can start a business like my proofreading company. I call that services arbitrage. So you might provide, like I did, proofreading services, or maybe transcription services, or you might provide video editing services. Whatever it is, you're coming up with a company where you connect customers with people who provide some sort of contract service and you act as a middleman. Now, with that business, you basically have two jobs. Hire the good contractors to deliver the service, find the customers to buy the product. Once you've done that and you've got consistent traffic that's bringing customers and focusing on repeat customers, that business can be very automated. My proofreading company was by far the lowest amount of work I've ever had with a company once it was set up, because all I did was check in on, well, actually, initially I was checking in on email, but eventually I outsourced that job to an assistant. So I really only had to make sure nothing was broken each week, and the assistant would send me a couple of matters that only I could deal with. So it was less than 2 hours a day to run that one, benefit from. And once I feel like I've done that, then I'll decide what's next. And that makes me happy at the moment. It's just about, for me, almost everything I've always done is about realizing my potential. So I feel like I know how to do something and I understand something. I want to see the result. That's what drives me. It might be in blogging. It might be in a startup. It might be in other aspects of life, from, you know, maybe you're focusing on better eating, losing weight, gaining weight, getting into relationships, all these things you feel like you start to get better at. And if you have knowledge, for me, the greatest satisfaction is the execution of knowledge in delivering a result. That will always be what, you know, makes me happy and what drives me. Question 18. How do you foresee the future of blogging? Do you think blogs will continue to live as they do now, along with blog comments? Will membership sites have a future? What possible changes should we be prepared for? Well, I was actually just talking to Gideon Chowick, a good friend of mine, about this very subject, and we agreed on what we consider the future of everything to do with information. So if you're talking about blog comments, blogging, membership sites, the big concept we think that eventually everything will head towards is it will all be free. All information will be free. So you won't be charging for digital information products. So membership sites that are just information probably won't exist. You'll be giving them for free. All your videos will be free. All your training products will be free. So in my case, all my guides will be free. All my courses will be free. Everything I've ever produced in terms of written or published content will be free. But for that to work, you need to have some kind of business model behind it. If you want to see an example of how this has already happened in another industry, look at the music industry. Music industry, the music's all free. We already know that. You can go to YouTube and watch every single film clip you ever wanted to on there. It's all for free anytime on demand. So the musicians of the world have had to find other platforms to focus their income-producing efforts on. And for them, it's become about adding value services and products. So live events have become a much more important aspect of their income streams. You know, back in the day, it used to be record sales and then live events. Now, record sales, no, unless you're at the very, very, very top of the tree, you might sell enough MP3s to make some good money. But most artists in the musical world make their money from performance. Then there's also the same concept of that rabid tribe who buy everything they produce. So their music might be free, but the special edition limited print, and it wasn't a huge business, but it made a salary for me. You know, best years it was doing $100,000 in revenue a year. I get to keep about 50% of that after all the costs and things come out. So I could live off it, and have no work almost. But again, I had to set it up. I had to build the website. I had to find the customers and find the editors and the proofreaders. So there was a bit of work to start off with. And the other thing I did was buy and sell websites. I mentioned that prior. Same story there. If you have a bit of capital, you can buy some websites that are somewhat passive in terms of their business model. I focused on blogs, which I hired other writers, and I focused on forums, which have user-generated content. So my job was basically to increase the income these sites made, which is what I usually did by adding more advertising and things like that. So those sites were quite automated. And once I had the assistant managing them, again, not much work, but there is that period of buying them, taking them over, improving their performance, hiring an assistant. Once you're established, though, 2 hours is definitely realistic. A lot of it actually is a choice you make. Do you want to set this up as a near passive income business, or do you want to keep growing it? If you want to keep growing, 2 hours is not going to do it. You need more hours for growth. You need more hours for setting something up. But once you reach a point and you decide that your strategy is passive, then you certainly can set things up to be very hands-off. And that's what I did with quite a few of my businesses over the years. Question 12. You suffered a personal tragedy when you lost your mother. It was sad and affected you in a big way, but you resurged as a stronger person. What message would you give to people on how to move on and live your life, leaving the difficult times behind them? Well, that's potentially a very long answer to that question, but I don't think it's appropriate for me to talk about that as much as I would talk about blogging. What I can say is that you basically have a choice of how you react to any situation. And this comes right back to what I was talking about in terms of reframing and looking at your internal dialogue. And in fact, my mother was a teacher and a practitioner of CBT, which you might, this is what it's often called, cognitive behavior therapy or cognitive behavior training. I didn't study that, and my mother gave me a few tips here and there when I was younger, and I read a book that kind of talked about it, but it wasn't structured and wasn't called CBT. Long story short, you can interpret how you view the world and reframe any situation to however you would like to react to it. So there's obviously a period of time to go through different experiences based on, you know, how you're feeling, what your emotional state is, but at some point you will decide what you want to do, given that you kind of don't have a choice. That's the ultimate thing, is you either can keep living in the current condition you're in, and if you're okay with that, then okay. If you're not happy the way things are, then you make the decision to change it. That's ultimately all you can do. You've got choices, you decide what direction to take, and if you're not happy, I recommend choosing things that guide you towards happy things. That's a very simplistic way of looking at it, but really that is it. It's as simple as, am I happy with what's going on? Am I happy with how I'm reacting to this? If any of the answers to that is no, change your reaction, change the circumstances until you are happy, if happiness is a goal you're looking for, which most of us are. So I know, and certainly anyone who's had a tragedy, there is always a period of adjustment, of mourning, of, you know, experiencing loss. It's something we all go through until it's our own turn to kick the bucket as well. So, you know, let's not forget that you don't get to choose whether you die or not. It's one of those non-options. The only time you don't get a choice is that one. So everything else you can choose, but that one you probably, you know, you got to deal with. So anyway, next question, question 13. You're back in business now after a gap of some time. What are the products and services that you offer now, and how helpful are they to bloggers and internet marketers? What is the next rocking product that you are coming up with? Well, I'm primarily, as you've probably heard throughout this whole interview, focusing on people who want to build blogs that do not focus on advertising and affiliate income and do not focus on high volumes of traffic. I'm looking for people who want to start blogs, build a small, consistent stream of traffic from a handful of techniques, so not trying to do everything and be on every platform, but finding one or two things that work really well for you, and then getting a lot of leverage from that. So building a customer base, servicing them really well, having a range of products, and building a product funnel and a marketing funnel behind it. So most of my products are around the blogging area. So at the moment, I'm building that funnel myself. So as I said, I have the entry products. So if you want to get started with what I teach, I have a guide on mindset and productivity. I have a guide on how to buy and sell blogs and websites. So if you don't want to build a site, you could buy one. And I have a guide on getting traffic. So those are low price. We're talking $30 to $50, and it can get you started with core aspects of having a successful blog business. If you then want to continue this process, then I have a coaching program. It's a community. It's basically a platform called the EJ Insider, where I interact with people every day. You can ask questions, and it's basically for people who want more time with me, a more personal connection, not just reading a guide, but the ability to ask questions and interact. And then the next level, which I'm currently working on, I can't give you a concrete answer as to what will come out first or when they will come out, but basically I have the courses I've always had, Blog Mastermind, Membership Site Mastermind, and the new one, the 2-hour workday. They all teach an aspect of this. So Blog Mastermind is basically a more of an A to Z guide about how to make a blog that creates a sale. So it's all about the conversion. Membership Site Mastermind, which I probably will change names to something that's a little bit more open. I don't want to just teach memberships. I want to teach product funnel. So that'll be about product creation, content repurposing, how to create that products that you sell from the blog. So Blog Mastermind teaches you how to use the blog to make the sale. And then the information product course will teach you how to create the products that you then sell. And then 2-hour workday, it's something new that I've had for a long time in my sort of in my archives that I never released. It was created even before Tim Ferriss came out with the 4-hour work week, but it was a bit unfortunate that the name was so close to his. But I'm going to use that. I'm actually going to go out there and sort of leverage the fact that people love the 4-hour work week and offer this course called the 2-hour workday, which essentially will teach services arbitrage. So basically what I talked about before about being a middle person providing a service, that's completely different to blogging in terms of a business model. But you know, a lot of people don't want to have that kind of business. I didn't either. I didn't see myself having a blog. I thought I'd just have a business where I provide a product or a service that other people would deliver and I would be a middleman. So that's one of the options that I've done with my proofreading business. And I would like to have a course out there for people who want to follow in that business model. And then, most of the stuff will be based on what kind of reaction I get to these products and services. So a lot of this, I'm still very much in the middle of developing it all. So I don't know what's coming out when, and it's a bit embryonic. So at the moment, all I have is whether you want traffic, whether you want mindset and productivity, or you want to buy and sell, some nice low entry guides are available at ejinsider.com. Question 14. You're a brand in yourself. Should bloggers try to build a brand too? If yes, then what are the best ways to do that? Well, you kind of can't help it if you're a personal blogger. Like if you're the only person writing your content, you will end up being a brand because you will infuse your personality into your writing. It's just the way it is. Not something you have to proactively go about building. Some people are natural at it. They love it. They love being in the spotlight. They love being themselves. And if you have a loud personality or certain aspects of your personality that people will naturally gravitate towards, your brand will be associated with that style. In my history, I've had some unusual advantages that were not deliberate, but became part of my brand. In the early days, it was my long hair. Not many people had long hair, and I was this sort of somewhat, I didn't look like everyone else, I guess is the way to put it. It made me stand out. It was a point of differentiation. Plus, I have this weird name, and you know, not many other Yarrows on the planet. So people would very easily, if they would become introduced to my work, would remember Yarrow, would remember the long hair. After I cut my hair, it's funny, I still have people today who will act surprised when they rediscover me and go, "Where'd your hair go?" And that was 7 years ago when I cut my hair. So it's been a long time, but you know, that's just the way things are. I think branding is a great aspect of writing a blog. And I think if you think of yourself as a personal brand, if you're prepared for it, then certainly go after the things that make you different and accentuate them. That's how you can build a brand around your personality. You can do gimmicks, you can have mascots, you can have, you know, types of logos, you can have phrases. You know, John Lee Dumas uses the Entrepreneur on Fire. He has that podcast and he says, "Let's ignite." And so he's got a bit of a cheesy slogan. You know, Pat Flynn is all about, he's the crash test dummy. So he positions himself around that. And then Derek Halpern positions himself around using psychology and studies to, you know, demonstrate proof of certain things that work in marketing. So everyone has an angle and an aspect that will become part of your brand. The important question to ask yourself, though, is, are you prepared to be the brand? Because if you are thinking of selling your business one day, you decrease your chances of selling it if it's heavily tied into your brand. I know my own blog and business would be difficult to sell because it's all about me. It's possible. Ideally, though, if you are thinking of selling, I would use a different name to your own name so that you can sell the business and someone can take over that role. Or, of course, choose a business model that's not as focused on you as an individual. So have a business name, have a team, have a maybe a team of writers, or have a product and service that is separate from you. And that's much more easy to sell. It's a big, important strategic decision to make at the beginning. You do want to consider this. Are you building something to sell? And that's often how you get rich. You may not get rich from the income you make as you run the business because it keeps going back into the business. But when you sell it, you get that big payday of potentially multiple six figures to millions of dollars. So thinking about building something to sell is actually a really important decision that blogging as an individual is not really about. If you're building a personal branded blog, chances are you're going to have trouble selling it. If you want to use a blog to create something sellable, you should have a team of writers and make it a bit more like that sort of magazine format, like you'll find with most of the biggest blogs like Huffington Post and Mashable, Social Media Examiner, Business Insider. There's so many of them out there, but they don't have an individual brand associated with them anymore, even if they started with one like Mashable and Huffington Post. Okay, question 15. Blog traffic and making money online are interrelated, aren't they? What are the best ways to do both? Well, very much tied back to my original argument about not focusing on advertising and not focusing on affiliate income. If you're focusing on selling your own products and services, then you don't need as much traffic. You just need a higher quality traffic. So that's where the relationship happens. It's all about targeting, getting to know your ideal customer, your customer avatar, finding out where they hang out, and then attracting them and making the choice to pick a customer demographic that are actually buyers. That is such a huge, important decision to make. Even if you think there is a massive audience, if no one buys stuff in that industry, then doesn't matter. You might get a lot of traffic, but you won't make any money. So you really, this is more not a decision about is making money and traffic interrelated. It's about niche selection. It's about customer avatars. It's about being clear about who you're targeting, what you offer them. The clearer you get on that, the more likely it is you make money, the easier it is to get traffic. So that's where everything begins. Question 16. Social media is more important than ever. What kind of social media promotion strategy would you suggest to bloggers? Ooh, well, to be absolutely honest, I do not have a big social media strategy. I make use of Twitter and Facebook because they're fun, and I repost my content onto those sites as well as LinkedIn and Google+. I do agree that Google+ in particular is important because Google uses that data in their search rankings. So being nice to Google, unfortunately, Google's the master right now since it sends so much traffic. You do want to factor in what Google wants you to do. So being a Google+ user, setting up your Google account, doing Google authorship, that's pretty much the only mandatory social media aspect I would recommend. I actually believe you can ignore social media altogether and have a successful business still. It's not as important as people make it out to be. What happens is, though, is certain industries benefit from it immensely. Certain people love it and they spend all their time thinking about it, studying it. It is a brilliant source of traffic. It's a brilliant source of customers. It's interwoven into how the internet works today. So you certainly gain a benefit from having a presence on these platforms, but you don't have to use them as an everyday time sink. You could just go to Facebook, spend money on ads, and if you have the right target customer with the right offer, you will make so much more money than you ever will by just using Facebook as a regular normal user interacting here and there. Because if you're focusing on conversion, it's about getting a target customer and making a sale. If you're focusing on long-term engagement and building a tribe and having a massive following, then these social media tools become helpful, but that is not a short path. You have a long process and it's going to be an ongoing process you have to do forever, which is why I don't want to depend on social media. I do not look to anything that requires lots of hefty work every day for a long time in order to make it worthwhile. That to me is a recipe for not a 2-hour workday. That being said, if you love it, then that's the thing you love. So you should do it all the time. And I know there's a lot of people who do, and that's why social media is important to them. Marlena, probably that's the same for you. I think you're a big fan of social media, so you should spend a lot of time there. My argument is you don't need it. It's one traffic strategy of many. You can choose to apply. It's up to you to pick the best one for your situation. Question 17. I'm sure bloggers would like to know more about your personal views, about your concepts of happiness and take on life. What is your purpose of life and how would you like to be remembered? Ooh, that's a big question. This thing changes. You know, I go from being much more idealistic when I was younger, and then circumstances change based on what's important to you in a moment. Sometimes you're so focused on making money and building a basic level of cash flow and standard of life that everything is about that. Then you make enough money to start contemplating what you really want to do with your time. That's what I found, what my own experience was over the years. I went from I need to make enough money to move out of my house to I want to make bigger money so I have true financial freedom. Like I want to have $1 million in the bank and own my house and own my car and not have any loans. But when you reach a point where you start making like $30,000 a month, which was what I was at a couple of years ago, I realized I could decide how to use my time. And that's when I was thinking, well, what do I want to do next? And that's why I started a startup, because I was quite keen to have that kind of experience. So for me, as I said, things change. I'm not worried about being remembered. I enjoy writing. That's certainly something I like. And I plan to use some kind of writing in everything I do for the rest of my life. But I also love startups and technology and those sort of big ideas that change the world. So I'm planning on moving to San Francisco. I might get involved with another startup again at some point soon. But for the moment, my only focus is getting what I know about outside of my head and onto information that other people can benefit from. And once I feel like I've done that, then I'll decide what's next. And that makes me happy at the moment. It's just about, for me, almost everything I've always done is about realizing my potential. So I feel like I know how to do something and I understand something. I want to see the result. That's what drives me. It might be in blogging, it might be in a startup, it might be in other aspects of life, from, you know, maybe you're focusing on better eating, losing weight, gaining weight, getting into relationships, all these things you feel like you start to get better at. And if you have knowledge, for me, the greatest satisfaction is the execution of knowledge in delivering a result. That will always be what, you know, makes me happy and what drives me. Question 18. How do you foresee the future of blogging? Do you think blogs will continue to live as they do now, along with blog comments? Will membership sites have a future? What possible changes should we be prepared for? Well, I was actually just talking to Gideon Chowick, a good friend of mine, about this very subject, and we agreed on what we consider the future of everything to do with information. So if you're talking about blog comments, blogging, membership sites, the big concept we think that eventually everything will head towards is it will all be free. All information will be free. So you won't be charging for digital information products. So membership sites that are just information probably won't exist. You'll be giving them for free. All your videos will be free. All your training products will be free. So in my case, all my guides will be free. All my courses will be free. Everything I've ever produced in terms of written or published content will be free. But for that to work, you need to have some kind of business model behind it. If you want to see an example of how this has already happened in another industry, look at the music industry. Music industry, the music's all free. We already know that. You can go to YouTube and watch every single film clip you ever wanted to on there. It's all for free anytime on demand. So the musicians of the world have had to find other platforms to focus their income producing efforts on. And for them, it's become about adding value services and products. So live events have become a much more important aspect of their income streams. You know, back in the day, it used to be record sales and then live events. Now record sales, no, unless you're at the very, very, very top of the tree, you might sell enough MP3s to make some good money. But most artists in the musical world make their money from performance. Then there's also the same concept of that rabid tribe who buy everything they produce. So their music might be free, but the special edition limited print version of something won't be free, and the true core fans will buy that. So again, that marketing funnel becomes important. The tribe becomes important because they spend the most money on what you do. So what you'll probably find in the future is that all blogging will be free. All information you produce online will be free. You'll have live workshops, you'll have private coaching, group coaching programs, you'll have special limited edition type things you do. And you'll probably do things for people. You'll deliver services, you'll have products done for them, you'll have software, you'll have automation. It'll be what people already do, you know, services like Lead Pages and Aweber and Entreport and Fusionsoft and all the various plugins you can buy. All those sorts of business models will become the more prevalent style, and information will be free. As for things like, will blogs live and where will comments be? At the end of the day, publishing is not going to go away. I wrote about this recently. If humans continue to communicate using words, there will always be a place for publishing. And I doubt humans are going to stop communicating using words unless we tap into some sort of, you know, psychokinetic kind of connection, which I don't see happening, certainly not in the near future. So we will need to publish. A blog and comments in the internet happens to be the tool we use today. Smartphones invented another platform, a mobile way of communicating and of reading published content. Apps, again, changing that. So the platforms change and the tools change, but unless there's something significant changing about the internet, then I don't see blogging going away. That's like saying, will the website be replaced? And right now, the internet is still predominantly websites. They might be more social, they might be more interactive, but it's still publishing words. Don't you tell me any social platform, it's still publishing words. It's music on YouTube, it's audio on podcasting, it's written words on a blog, it's written words on social media. They're still all words. So that's not changed. It's just been a change in platform. So until a new platform comes along, nothing is going to stop blogging, in my opinion. It would have to be a better platform. Maybe something 3D, maybe something more connected to our body might change things, but it's still publishing. Question 19, making money online and blogging are addictive professions. Moreover, they can adversely affect our health too. What measures do you take to keep fit and healthy? What would be your health tip for bloggers and internet marketers who remain glued to their laptops and computers most of the time? Well, don't do that. You don't want to stay glued to your computer all the time, not healthy. Major tip for me would be use a stand-up desk. That is, I'm talking to you right now standing up. I'm moving around. I'm not sitting in a chair. I have better posture. My energy, my blood is flowing. It's a lot different to sitting in a chair and doing this. That's by far number one tip. Sitting will kill you. For me, the most important thing is a rapid changing of activity. So, you know, no body is built to do one thing for long periods of time. No matter what it is, you shouldn't do something for hour upon hour. So, you know, you shouldn't be writing a blog, you shouldn't be reading internet posts, you shouldn't be exercising, you should be mixing it all up. Nothing is all the time. So for me, and this is an aspect of why having the freedom that we talked about earlier on, having the control of your life to choose how you spend your time is really important, because once I finish this recording with you, Harlina, I'm leaving the house. It's just gone midday. I'll probably go grab some lunch, and I'm going to leave at about 1 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm going to ride my bike somewhere else, and then I'm going to sit down with my laptop at a cafe and do a couple hours of work, and then I'm going to get back on the bike and ride home, and then I'm going to go do a yoga class. Then I'll come home and send some emails and, you know, do a bit of work at like a 10, 11 o'clock at night. So the important point there is the transition of activity. We all know you have to eat right. We all know you have to exercise. We all know you have to work. We all know you have to educate yourself, and you have to socialize. How you combine those things and how you divvy up your time spent is what matters. So variability and doing them all in some shape or format every week is basically how you stay in balance. What I do believe in, though, is not forcing yourself to be in balance every day. There's a time to counterbalance, basically. In fact, I read about this in The One Thing by Gary Keller recently. He talks about life balance not being the answer, but life counterbalancing being the answer. And I totally agree with him. What he means by that is there are times in your life when you have to focus on an aspect more than other things. So your business might be going through a launch, you're getting a new product ready, you have to focus on making money or you're going to be homeless. That's when you start counterbalancing your time heavily towards the income-producing work you're doing. But eventually, once you get some income, things are settled down, you start to counterbalance a little bit away from work, and then you can go back to maybe family or health or something like that. And obviously, you know, you tell your family that this is what I'm focusing on right now, but it won't be forever. Unfortunately, what most people will do is they'll counterbalance so far towards one activity that eventually their body will start to tell them they can't do that anymore, they'll get sick. Getting sick forces the counterbalance movement away from what they were doing back to repair and recovery of body. And that might trigger a response. You know, what you want to do is make sure there's enough maintenance in terms of balance. And then as you flow from different goals, you counterbalance the majority. So there's a time to spend with family, which might be weekends or holidays. There's a time to spend focused on work during projects. But there's also always a little bit of exercise, always good eating going on. And then, you know, you might decide you want to lose a bunch of weight or gain a bunch of muscle. Let's counterbalance away from work towards more heavily intensive exercising. So it's moving time away, understanding that you have a finite amount of time. So actually living a balanced life is impossible, but living a counterbalanced, constantly flowing life works as long as you always maintain a basic standard for the critical things like health, eating, exercise, rest, that sort of thing. All right, question 20. Lastly, what do you think of AHA Now? What special message do you have for its lovely and vibrant community? Well, I certainly can see the community aspect of what you're doing, Harlina. Like I can feel the passion you have for socially connecting with your audience, and I'm sure your audience feels the same way about you. You have a very strong level of engagement, and I've come across a lot of people like you who are so good at devoting so much time and effort to their people. And that's wonderful. I would never suggest you stop doing that. But one thing I want to speak to and suggest for yourself and all your audiences is asking yourself this simple question. Are you happy with the amount of money you're making with your business? And if not, are you doing things to increase your income? And for me, the answer to that question should be, are you making enough offers? Unfortunately, we can spend all of our time just engaging and enjoying the social interaction. And you know what? If you've got a lot of inheritance, or you've got a sugar daddy or a sugar mommy who's paying your bills, and then that's fine. You can spend as much time socializing and engaging and just talking for the sake of talking. That's wonderful. But if you're having a business and you want to make a profit, then I would suggest that you think about counterbalancing a little bit of time away towards offer creation, product creation, marketing and selling. And then, and this is the incredible thing, if you start making a living from what you do, you get access to resources, you get access to the potential for greater leverage, and you can actually reach and help a whole lot more people. So in some aspects, I would suggest that you're actually hindering your audience because you're not able to help them as well as you could if you did have a profitable business. Think about all the things you could create and give away to your people if you had an income stream that was consistent and profitable. You can do so much more and help so many more people. So in some ways, it's even better to be focusing on a profitable business than just the social engagement issue. But like I said, it's a personal choice based on your situation, and you're certainly doing a great job of interacting with your community and supporting them, Harlina. So that's it for me. Thank you for giving me all these questions, some different ones there that I'm not used to answering. I hope everyone got something from it. And my name is Yaro, Y-A-R-O, from entrepreneurs-journey.com. Thank you, Harlina, and I talk to you soon. Goodbye.